So I'm calling to order this meeting of the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Division. We're going to start by having the clerk take the roll.
Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Katisa Watun, Vice Chair. Representative Franson. Representative Bonner.
Here.
Representative Dameth.
Present.
Representative Heinzman.
I'm here.
Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Pryor. Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
Representative West.
Here.
And so members and members of the public, I don't know if we're being amplified by these microphones, but my understanding is that we are being recorded, which is the requirement. So, and it's a small enough room that presumably we can all hear one another. I just want to confirm that we've verified that we are being recorded. So we have our minutes from the meeting of February 25th. If I can have a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Okay. Representative Bonner moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the February 25th minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We've approved our minutes. So with that, we will have Representative Sandell come up, if we can, first item on the agenda, to discuss House File 1512. And we will need to have a motion to put House File 1512, a motion that it be placed on the general register. I can motion for that. Would Representative Bonner, you mind making that motion?
Sure.
Again? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1512 be moved to the general register?
Yeah, based on the general register.
Based on the general register.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. So, members, we had a full hearing on this bill last year. It was included in a somewhat modified form from its original from the original bill in our division report, and so we're simply hearing the bill again today for the purposes of placing on the general register. I believe that there is an author's amendment, Representative Sandell, and so we'll have Representative Bonner move the DE1 amendment if we can do that.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Okay, and so members, my understanding is that this is in fact basically the same as what was in the prior bill that was included, or language included in our division report, with the exception that just an updating of an effective date, I believe. That may in fact be wrong, so this may simply be what was included. So, Representative Sandell, anything else you want to say about the DE1 amendment?
No, thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Bonner, for moving the bill. Thank you.
Okay, so then all in favor of approval of the author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. So the amended bill is now before the committee. And so, Representative Sandell, if you can please just remind us about your bill.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair Pinto and the committee members. Thanks very much for the opportunity to be here and to ask for your support for House File 1512. Again, the topic of teacher training and licensure are important issues, certainly. We're here this morning because we all share a dedication to early childhood learning. We're looking for ways to foster, to encourage, to direct the imagination, the cognition, and the emotional center of each child. I'm offering 1512 because I'm convinced that a degree-centered program combining research, classroom discussion, extensive clinical experience, analysis, and review should be part of each teacher's preparation, including, of course, those who teach our youngest children, and that such a program would meet the licensure requirements of Minnesota Rules Chapter 8710. Additionally, I support this legislation because of the foundation it gives to the teaching profession, including early childhood teachers and school contracts as equals with their professional educators, and attracting dedicated young men and women to work that has often gone unrewarded and unappreciated. I believe that our youngest children, their teachers, will benefit and for the rest of their lives from this legislation, and I hope we can all agree on that. I'm eager and happy to answer any questions about the bill or the implications of the bill, and I'm happy to offer my suggestions and reasons I support this bill. Also with me today is Meg Luer, an attorney with Education Minnesota, who may help me with the details that I can't provide for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. So any questions for Representative Sandell? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have a couple of questions. I had superintendents in my office yesterday.
Yeah.
And they were there for basically one reason, and that was to talk to me about the difficulty finding teachers. Now, this is a category different than the one we were specifically discussing, But as I understand it, local school districts already have the authority to require an early childhood educator hold a license. Your bill is taking a completely different approach and saying that the state of Minnesota as a whole, as I understand it, would require this licensure. This is, in my mind, taking the opportunity for school districts to make some choices for themselves out of the picture. Why would you do that?
Representative Sandell.
Representative Heisman and Chair Pinto, that's a really interesting and important question. Some school districts will require that licensure, but other districts not only will not require the licensure, but in many cases will not recognize early childhood teachers as a teacher. I was a high school teacher, and I was part of the bargaining contract, and I was recognized as a teacher. But in some districts, early childhood teachers are not even referred to as teachers. They're called support staff, or they're called instructors, and are not allowed to participate in the or be covered by the bargaining contract. Now, someone might say, "Well, is this bill simply to strengthen the position of Education Minnesota and the bargaining unit?" That's not the case. The other issue that you brought up, Representative, is trying to find teachers to fill these positions, and one of the reasons that we don't have a large enough workforce in this area is because early childhood teachers have not been rewarded or remunerated as they should, and I think that this helps in support. And I'm sympathetic to your question. I don't think the state should get into situations where districts can make their own decisions, but in this situation, our children, and I think our school districts are kind of missing out because we have too few teachers, too frequently unrewarded, and too frequently unencouraged to be part of this teaching group.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just help me understand, the logic here is we're going to make it more difficult, and that's going to in turn produce more opportunities somehow to school districts who are desperate to find people to fill these positions. I don't understand that.
Representative Sandell.
Chair Pinto and Representative, I hope that's not the case. No, this is not to make this more difficult at all. It's to make it more encouraging for teachers to participate in this or to join this teaching group. Not only in the districts that you represent, I'm in South Washington County, and early childhood teachers are not identified as full-fledged professional educators. This does not include teachers or staff in private organizations. It's only teachers who are under contract in school districts. I think it will encourage people to participate in this profession at this level, and I think it will really encourage teacher preparation programs at our colleges and universities to recruit and encourage people to be part of this profession. I certainly wouldn't have come forward with this bill if I thought this was going to make it more difficult. I want to encourage people to be the best teachers possible for the children, and you know, who are at their most impressionable age and can offer the greatest reward and work.
Representative Sandell, you had referenced Ms. Luger before. Did you want to have her step in? And this will certainly then get back to Representative Heisman, but if you can identify yourself for the record, please, and then proceed.
Yep. Good morning. My name is Meg Luger-Nicolai. I'm with Education Minnesota, and thank you, Chair Pinto and Representative Sandell. Just to make a quick point of clarification, districts aren't generally having difficulty finding teachers with licenses. The only question is whether or not they include in their job description a requirement that licenses are preferred or required. And you'll find in many districts in which they claim that licenses are preferred, they are also holding out their staff to the general public as all having licenses. And that was certainly the truth in South Washington County. So it isn't really that much of a market issue. It's really a question of whether or not individuals are going to be treated like the teachers alongside of whom they are teaching every day.
Representative Eisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just out of curiosity, are we taking public testimony today, or is Education Minnesota the only group that gets to talk today?
So, Representative Heisman, we had taken public testimony last year. As Representative Sandell referenced, he was going to sort of phone a friend if he got questions and needed help in being able to answer questions. I'm not sure if you're aware of somebody in particular who had wanted to, but we had quite a full discussion last year, and so as is sort of the practice, we were just going to have Representative Sandell present the bill and proceed. But if you have something in mind, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I just didn't see Representative Sandell indicate that he wanted any. I just saw that suddenly a testimony or a testifier come to the desk.
Thank you, Representative Heisman. And Representative Sandell, I thought in his opening remarks, had said that he would have Ms. Luger-Nicolai, I think he referenced her as Ms. Luger, be available in case there were questions. So he had said that at the start. So sorry, but there may have been a misunderstanding.
Thank you.
Representative Sandell.
Representative Heisman, I'd be happy to have as broad a conversation and discussion as the committee would invite.
Sure. Glad to hear that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other discussion or questions? Okay. Hearing none then. Then in that case, Representative Bonner renews. Oh, Representative Damon.
Chair, I would recommend that the bill would be referred to Ed Policy and then also Labor Committee.
Okay, so our committee has jurisdiction over early education issues because we report up to education and finance. In general, we haven't had an overlap with education policy. Do you want to maybe talk about what you have in mind in terms of the labor piece of side of things?
Yeah, the on the DE1, line 1.15, section 179A.03 refers to PELRA.
So Representative Damuth, I'm not sure if we'll see if we can maybe bring this up. I'm not sure that teacher licensure issues have generally been sent to reviewed by labor. I think that in my experience, it's generally been if it's an issue with the K-12 system, that'd be education policy. If it's under kindergarten, preschool, then addressed by us. So I think we should have, in the same way that education policy reviews bills, I guess I'm not sure that there is a would be on that. Have you, Representative Damon, have you spoken with the chair of labor and have a sense that they do feel the need to review this?
Chair, I have not had a chance to speak to that committee, but this bill would in essence expand the group that would be subject to PELRA.
Representative Damon, I'm let's see if Representative Sandell has any thoughts on that first.
Chair Pinto and Representative, I'd be happy to have a conversation at Labor or at Ed Policy. I can't comment on the implication of this bill for PELRA. I'm sorry.
So, Representative Damuth, I guess the thing that I'm struggling with is just to figure out whether typically when there are issues regarding these contracts and whether when PELRA is involved, whether bills do go there. I wonder if we can, because I guess it's, as I say, it's always been my understanding that when there's issues regarding these types of contracts, that they really are addressed within education policy for K-12, and so then the equivalent of us for this. Let me think. And so, Representative Sandell, you have nothing further to add on this yourself.
I don't. Chair Pinto, it's my experience, my professional experience, as well as my personal enthusiasm for teachers at preschool and early ed to be as enthusiastic, energetic, and recognize as important as they are. So you know my enthusiasm for this bill, and I want to see it. I hope we can pass it.
And Representative Damon, if I can ask, in what way would this change PELRA? Because it just looks like it simply confirms that these individuals do qualify under the definition at 179A.03, subdivision 18, but it doesn't seem to change it. But please, if you
sure, it would potentially expand those that would maybe not be under PELRA at this point. By this bill going through, it could expand that.
I'm not sure. Why don't we be basing this in the same way we had a sort of a phone a friend on a question. I'm not sure if there's anybody in the audience who has expertise in this area wishes to comment. We'll have Ms. Luger-Nicolai come on back up, please. Ms. Ms. Luger-Nikolai, please proceed.
Still Ms. Luger-Nikolai, thank you. It doesn't expand the definition of public employee, so they're already public employees and subject to PELRA. So what this does is provides a temporary, to match the exemption from licensure for 5 years, in which individuals are given the chance to achieve a license if they don't already have one, it does allow them to be part of the bargaining unit, which they would have been had there not been a simple clerical change to their job description anyway.
And Ms. Representative Damath, I am noticing that the separate definition under subdivision 14 of public employee in 179.8.03 does seem that it would already include these folks. I'm not sure that it would make the change that you have in mind, but Representative Damath.
Chair, then I would move to amend this motion to refer it to labor.
Okay. So, Dan, I did want to confirm that you were making a motion from before, so I've got that. And you still want to refer to labor despite the fact that it sounds like it doesn't make a change to PELRA, at least as far as we've heard. But
yes, Chair, please.
Okay. All right. Okay. And so, members, we have a motion on the table. Any further discussion about the motion? Okay, and I would recommend a no vote. I feel like we've got the information that we need and simply can send this to the general register. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay, and the motion does not prevail. Okay, so with that, any further discussion regarding House File 1512 as amended? So hearing none, all in favor of placing House File 1512 as amended. I guess Representative Bonner, I should confirm, renews her motion.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion to move House File 1512 to the general register.
Okay. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Okay. The motion prevails. Congratulations, Representative Sandell. Your bill as amended is placed on the general register.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you to all the members of the committee. Thank you.
Okay. So, Representative Becker-Finn, we've got you up next. Okay, we have House File 3222 up for consideration. I believe Representative Katiza Watun will be moving the bill before the committee for consideration. It is my intention to lay this over for reasons I'll get into in just a second. But Representative Katiza Watun, are you making that motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3222 before the committee.
Okay, thank you. And the reason for the laying over is just that there is still a question about fiscal note, and our thought is just to get that confirmed, because that will tell us if we're sending the bill to the general register, sending it to or to another committee to address fiscal issues. We had thought initially that there would not be any, and just want to make absolutely sure. Representative Becker-Finn, with that, please present your bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 322, hopefully you've looked at the House Research Summary. It's pretty straightforward. It would add a requirement to our state building code that diaper changing stations would be required in publicly accessible bathrooms, and that requirement could be met by having a changing station in both a men's room and a women's restroom, or in one gender neutral or family restroom. And this, I'm going to let my testifier in a minute talk a little bit more about this, but this idea did germinate with my constituent who's here, Alice Lauren. So I'm going to talk a little bit about it, and then she can share her thoughts as well. But it would be really great if businesses were already doing this. If you are have been a parent of young children or a grandparent anytime in recent time, you've probably seen that it isn't necessarily the norm in a lot of places. Even in new construction, where hundreds of thousands of dollars are spent on a building, it's often an overlooked feature. And that's part of the reason we wanted to bring this forward, is to let businesses and the public know loud and clear that a lot of folks do want to see this. And the state building code is to deal with public health and safety, and that although this issue is also a feel-good issue. It does have some public health ramifications as well. As many of you know, I'm a parent. My kids are now 9 and 5 and a half. But when they were younger, my husband and I were continually flummoxed by the number of places where there was not a safe, clean area to change our children when we were out in the community. And this is was particularly true in men's bathrooms. So this is partially a parity issue as well, to make sure that dads can parent just as much as moms. And I will add that other cities and states have enacted laws like this, and we're happy to bring it forward here in Minnesota. We did have the first hearing already in the Labor Committee. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, and she can share more about where this idea came from.
Welcome to the committee. Just identify yourself for the record, please, and then please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this House File 3222. My name is Alice Lohr, and I am a mom of a 6 and a 1.5-year-old. This bill is really valuable to me and all the parents and caregivers I know, because we all have shared negative experiences when we've entered an establishment that did not have changing tables in the restrooms. So I wanted to dive into some things that I think most parents have experienced. At the top of the list is what we all affectionately call the blowout. And if you've never experienced this, consider yourself extremely lucky. But for those of you who have not experienced what a blowout is, let me explain. A blowout is what happens when a baby poops with so much force and power that it goes all the way up the baby's back. When my husband and I first experienced this as first-time parents, we were in the comfort of our home, and we were shocked, and we were paralyzed, and we had no idea where to start to even begin cleaning our child. So I think about this a lot when I think about parents in the middle of winter who want to get out of the house, they go out to dinner, they go to some other establishment, and they experience a blowout. And what do? In the middle of winter, you can't go outside and change your baby in the freezing cold. So I kind of pulled some friends and asked them what they've done in the event that there was no changing table available. Some of them said they've changed the baby in a restaurant booth. Others rushed through dinner and waited to change the baby at home because the bathroom had no table and it was the middle of winter and the floor in the bathroom was full of dirty snow. Other friends have left the restaurant and just chose to never come back to that establishment because they knew that there was no changing table. So the business lost out on that revenue. Other friends have laid a baby's blanket on the dirty floor or their nice, clean winter coats on the floor just to be able to change their baby because they didn't want their baby to sit in that soiled diaper. One friend said that they plastered the bathroom floor with paper towels before laying the diaper pad down to change their baby. In my own experience, when my son was 2.5 months old, we went on vacation to North Myrtle Beach, and walking along the boardwalk, none of the public spaces had restrooms with changing tables. And so I had no choice but to lay my sweater out on the sand and then lay my child on the sand to change him. And we all know that sand gets everywhere. And so that was a really, really negative experience for me, which makes me never want to go to North Myrtle Beach again. Really, I feel passionate about this legislation because I know what it feels like to feel like a completely defeated mom when you just want to get the kids out and you show up and there's nothing on the table. I believe the average age of potty-trained children is about 3 years old, which means families are avoiding establishments for at least 3 years because there's no changing tables. In my own experience and friends' experiences, parents are in survival mode the first few years of that baby's life, and they don't have the capacity to talk with the business or contact their legislator about this problem. And the only reason why I was able to bring this up was because Representative Becker Finn happened to knock on my door while I was on maternity leave with my son. And, you know, as a mom who is on maternity leave at 3 in the morning, I think about stuff while feeding the baby, and this was one of those things, and so I eagerly brought it up to Representative Becker Finn. In all seriousness, though, as we talk about blowouts and things, I also wanted to keep in mind the parents whose children are born with disabilities and require special care when it comes to using the bathroom. Babies and toddlers who have intestinal or bladder issues and require special tubing or other aids, like all babies, should not be changed on the floor or on their parents' lap while sitting on the toilet seat. These parents face an even bigger hurdle when they stop somewhere to change their babies, especially going between, let's say they're from a rural area and they have to come to the Twin Cities. They're going to want to stop at a rest stop before going to the hospital or the doctor's appointments. And it's really tough for these families in particular when there are no changing tables. I think we can all agree that life already consists of many struggles and hurdles, and I urge our lawmakers to pass this bill so that we can remove at least one more hurdle that families have to face. We can help improve the lives of families across the state by taking this small step forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I know we have another testifier who had signed up, our former colleague, Representative Russ Peterson. If you can come on up, and so we'll have you testify, see if anybody else wants to, and then open up for questions. So please, Representative, nice to see you. If you can confirm identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. My name is Roz Peterson, and I'm a small business owner from Lakeville and a mother of two. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3222. I work with a lot of startup businesses that are just trying to live the American dream and start their own business, and a lot of them are in retail strip centers and other commercial buildings. So I do have some questions and concerns about requiring changing stations in all public restrooms. First of all, we're concerned about what exactly public means. So for example, in a retail setting, there might be one or two restrooms in that bay, but we want to make it accessible to our customers, but is that really public or not public? And typically when you're building something, the building officials are just going to assume everything is public, so will business owners have any discretion with that? And then secondly, is it really necessary to be required on every floor of the building, or would it be more appropriate to maybe have a bathroom or a baby changing station maybe somewhere in the building? So even in ADA law, they don't require it on every floor, so it does seem rather excessive. Unintended consequences of this bill becoming law could make these bathrooms inaccessible to the public due to lack of space and or cost, and there's already a barrier to entry for these small business startups due to existing regulations and onerous sack and whack fees, which are a problem here in the metro. There's also been some concerns about liability as well, because unfortunately sometimes the public abuses these baby changing stations. They sit on them, they break them. What if, unbeknownst to the business owner that something's been damaged? So I'm just saying that there's a little bit more to it. So I fully support baby changing stations in all restrooms. As a mother of two, I certainly have had my experiences, but on a voluntary basis. My concerns are about the unintended consequences, and I have some clarifications in the bill, and also some guardrails would help, such as requiring it only on buildings over 5,000 square feet, excluding renovations for existing restrooms, and changing the requirements to access to all genders somewhere in the building, not every floor. So thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Representative. Appreciate it. And Representative Becca Finn.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to respond to some of those comments, as I didn't even know that Ms. Peterson was coming in today, or that, and to be honest, this is the first sort of constructive feedback I've received from anyone at this point. I did want to clarify a couple things, that the bill would apply to publicly accessible bathrooms. So if you have, in a strip mall situation where there's, like at Rosedale Mall, not every facility has their own bathroom, but there are the public bathrooms that are available there to the public that are there shopping. So it would apply in that situation. And then this is not requiring all businesses to add changing stations. This would only apply to, and that was a part of the reason of putting it in the state building code, is that it only applies to new construction or if there are renovations to the bathroom. If you're not pulling a permit for the bathroom itself, you wouldn't have to add the changing station. It's actually much cheaper for businesses to do this when they're building the new construction than it is to kind of be pressured by folks visiting them to add one later on. As far as the liability, as many of you know, I'm an attorney, and the liability wouldn't be any different than it currently is for the businesses are being proactive and voluntarily having a changing station. You know, when people put themselves in harm's way, there's not going to be necessarily liability for a business in having a changing station in the bathroom. But I'm happy to take questions.
Good. Thank you. And Representative Peterson, thank you so much. And then members, questions. Representative Heitzman.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah, I had Representative. We'll go with you still, and then Representative Katiza with you, and we will get to you, Representative Heitzman.
Right. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we have three things that we agree on. This might not be one of them, Representative.
At least there's the three.
So I'm definitely one of those dads that has experienced what the testifier mentioned.
Thank you for not describing it again.
I'm not going to. No, I think once was enough. But you definitely need to understand the picture, so I appreciated the example. My kids are a little bit older now, 18, 16, 15, 9, 6, and 3. And diapers are kind of a thing of the past at the moment, but I still very vividly remember the thousands of opportunities I've personally had to take part in that process. I do have some concerns, though, and I think that Representative Peterson laid those out pretty well. And I am wondering if we have reached out to the business community to see if some of those things might be an option. And I think your response was that this was the first constructive feedback you've received. So I'm assuming those conversations haven't happened. Is that right or is that incorrect?
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I mean, none of the lobbyists from the realtors or the chamber or, you know, any of those folks have, you know, we've been, this bill's been featured on the news a couple times, so it's certainly not been a secret that we're working on this issue.
And you're going to be hearing in the Labor Committee.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Representative Heitzman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to confirm that those conversations have been happening, because I think that there very easily could be some misunderstandings, and I'm glad we're getting some clarification today as to who it would affect going forward. There is going to be some challenges, and I hope that the testimony that we heard just a few minutes ago will be taken seriously, because even if maybe we haven't had that feedback up to this point, there's no question that there should be an opportunity to further look at those options relative to floors and other confined spaces and difficulties. So I'm assuming that that's a possibility going forward, and I hope that that happens.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I'm open to looking at the requirement regarding each floor of the building, but I will note that if you're building a new construction with multiple floors, you're probably spending a whole lot of money already on this project, and this is actually not, you know, an individual diaper changing station itself is maybe $150, which, you know, in the grand scheme of a construction project is really not the huge burden that some folks might make it out to be. And if, you know, we're looking at new construction and renovations, they're going to have to be meeting the ADA as far as space already. So, you know, sort of the idea of the small business of rural Minnesota that's been in the same place for 100 years, this isn't going to apply unless they're building something new.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beckerfin, I don't think that anybody's looking at this going, oh my gosh, I have another $150 expense. I think that as a business owner, the issues that we face are not just the purchase of this particular item and the addition of it, but the maintenance of it. And in some cases, as Representative Peterson was mentioning, they get destroyed. And so now not only are you having to buy another one, you have to pay somebody to fix it or to install a new one. And then, you know, as my family was having to go through this process, it was super nice when there was sanitary products there. So, you know, you're maintaining, it's an ongoing cost to make sure that these things are clean and ready for the next situation, as we heard described. You know, so this is an ongoing cost. It isn't just $130 or $150, boom, you're done. There's ongoing expense there, so that should be something that's considered and talked about. So I'm glad that we heard that testimony today.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would say the benefits to a business are going to far outweigh, you know, if you're cleaning a bathroom, it's a pretty easy quick check of that while you're in the bathroom cleaning the bathroom. I suppose if you're not cleaning the bathrooms already, that's sort of a choice you're making as a business owner, and you know, the public's certainly going to notice that as well.
Okay. Representative Katisa Bertone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Beckerfin, for bringing forward this bill. I am a co-author on this bill, and I strongly support it. A couple of the discussion points today did bring a couple additional questions in my mind. One being, if we do have a discussion about changing the every floor requirement, we may want to think about adding something about signage into the piece of legislation, because I know for me personally, one of the trickiest things in being out and parenting and then having to find a bathroom, hopefully, that has a changing table, is locating that space in general. And then you get there and you discover, oh, there's no changing table. So hopefully I have my changing pad that I can lay my child on the floor, maybe if the floor is clean enough, you know, have them stand there while you awkwardly try to clean them up. And anyway, I was also curious about the retroactive costs. I mean, you mentioned maybe $150 in as far as new construction goes. I know that, I mean, there's probably some sort of support system that would be built into the wall in that part of new construction, but I'm just not sure exactly even how cost prohibitive it would be for a business if they were, you know, just wanting to add this benefit for their customers. And then just the third point of customer service. I mean, if you're in the retail business, if you're serving the public in general, you know, you are familiar with customer service, and this is something that I think, yeah, like you mentioned, would go far and beyond the cost of the business, servicing families and customers in this way. So I think it's just something that's common sense. In my opinion, in a couple ways, it doesn't even necessarily go far enough. In some of the Fortune 500 headquarters around the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, you have to have a badge to get in, so not necessarily publicly accessible. But if a member of the public or an elected official had to bring their child to a meeting in this space and they were badged in, and then they were behind the badge wall, and then desperately looking for a bathroom in which to change their child, and if this sounds like this actually has happened to me, it has. I waited for almost 10 minutes for someone to be out of the handicap stall, because often the changing tables are located in the handicap stall. I went into the handicap stall. There was no changing table in the handicap stall. I went back out to the help desk, asked if there was another bathroom. They said, oh, no, there's no other bathroom. I said, okay, I need to change my child. And they said, oh, well, the mother's room is available. I'm like, I'm not an employee here, so I don't have badge access to the mother's room. Also, do I want to necessarily change my child in a room that's made for breastfeeding and cleanliness, et cetera? Then they had me badged into the fitness center, and I changed my child on a towel in which somebody would, like, you know, dry off, and then they have services to wash the laundry, but on a like bench in the locker room on a towel. And so anyway, these things do happen, and so even if you're beyond a publicly accessible point, and this is a relatively new headquarters that was built in the last 5-ish years, I was very surprised that those choices weren't made during the construction process. So,
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your comments about the installation, you know, my family ran a small business for a long time, convenience stores in rural Minnesota. And, you know, it kind of runs the gamut as far as, like, how the bathroom is currently set up. And that's part of the reason, you know, if you're pulling a permit and you're doing some renovation of the bathroom or it's a new construction, kind of making sure that you're thinking about it now, because that is going to be much cheaper than trying to, like, go back and figure out where it would fit. I also have experience. I have a family member with disabilities, and, you know, we had to retrofit our bathroom to be accessible to him. And so, you know. You're going to need a stud finder. Kind of depends on your, you know, a lot of small businesses or owners can do a lot of that stuff themselves. But certainly if you had to hire somebody to do it, or you're dealing with tile or something like that, you know, retroactively to go back and do that is going to be more expensive. So it kind of runs the gamut.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Beckerfin. I think it's a win-win. It's a win for parents and kids, and I think it's a win for business, too, which is probably why the chamber hasn't commented, because this will draw more people to businesses because they will, it'll be more family-friendly and easier to access. So thank you for bringing this bill.
I will note it does feel like this is part of orienting our society around supporting young kids and families, which is good for all of us. We should be looking for many opportunities for this. Any other questions or discussion? Again, members, we're laying this over just to we'll get confirm whether there is in fact a cost, and then that will tell us which where it would go next. So, okay, well, I see nothing further. So with that, oh, Representative Becker Finn, we'll give you a closing remarks, please.
Thank,
my apologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will say, at our first hearing in the Labor Committee, we did have a mom who is a public health expert come in and testify in support about the public health benefits of making sure that we're not changing baby diapers in the middle of restaurants or in other places where it's not appropriate. Ideally, you should be doing this in a bathroom and not in a gym or a place where we're pumping or any of those things. So this does matter a lot to a lot of families. I certainly knew my family lives up north, and when I would drive up north, I can still tell you every single gas station along that route that was welcoming to my family and every single one that was not. And we certainly gave more business to the ones that had changing tables than the ones that didn't. And I just want to point out, too, and Ms. Lohr pointed it out, that, you know, parents who are really in the thick of it when you're at the age that your kids need their diapers changed, that's, like, the worst time to try to, like, organize and advocate for something like this. And so we sort of decided that as moms who had gone through it and have a little bit more wherewithal and are getting a little bit more sleep, that we would come forward and bring this forward. I think it'll make things easier for families, but also healthier and safer, too. Would really appreciate your support, and I encourage each of you to talk to your constituents with young kids and hear their stories. I've heard more personal stories and anecdotes on this issue than maybe any other bill that I've carried thus far. So thank you for your support.
Thank you, Representative Becker Finn. We appreciate it. So with that, the bill is laid over. So thank you. So members, Representative Richardson, I believe, is still in another committee, and so we're going to jump to the fourth item in the agenda, which means I need to go up to that table. So.
Members, we have House File 2319 of Chair Pinto's on the agenda today. Chair Pinto, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I move that House File 2319 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Chair Pinto moves that House File 2319 be re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. Mr. Chair, do you also have a DE2 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you would like in order for us to hear it?
I do, Madam Chair. Yes, I will move the DE2 amendment and maybe just provide just a little bit of explanation as well with your permission. So, members, 2319, as introduced, contained a set of proposals to address program integrity, both in child care assistance program and actually some other programs as well. A version of it was included in our division report, really this plus some other things as well, and it all passed the House. And then in the conference committee, there was one provision that did not become law. My understanding is it was blocked by the other body. And the DE2 amendment contains that remaining piece that passed the House. So those who voted for our HHS budget bill last spring have already voted in favor of this, and we've already had the consideration of this, et cetera. And it relates actually to a question that was asked by Representative Heintzman to the department about kind of what else is left to be addressed. This is a couple weeks ago, whenever that hearing was, and this anti-kickback crime. So anyway, so just disregarding the DE2, though, so you understand, it really is what remains of those set of proposals that did not become law. So with that, Madam Chair, I am moving the DE2 amendment.
Chair Pinto moves the DE2 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So House File 2319, as amended, is before the committee. Chair Pinto, please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, again, the real meat of it jumps, if you jump to page 7, I suppose, of the DE2. What it is is it's a set of crimes related to human services programs. I should note that there are certainly ways in which this conduct may be illegal from different angles, but this makes absolutely certain, and in particular relates to kickbacks. Again, there was a discussion on this last year as part of the broader set, and this is the one piece that was blocked, and so we want to be able to move it forward. And my understanding, I believe, is from House Fiscals that there's not a fiscal note relating to this. I should note this bill came to us via HHS Finance last year, so we'll need to go back up that way, which is why the motion is to refer to HHS Finance, and then it'll go through the process from there. But just to understand, because it came to us through there, it has to go back out through there. So, thank you.
Members, any questions on this bill? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Pinto, I'm hearing you talk a little bit about the difficulties that this language had as it made it to the other body. Can I just assume that there's been some conversations there? And if there were changes that need to be made or objections, I've had my own difficulties trying to get something through over there. So I'm just wondering if those conversations yielded anything that might assist us in this effort.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heitzman. So I believe that the problem was because it was a new crime, and in the Senate, the Judiciary Committee, the language had not gone through the Judiciary Committee, and they had a much smaller program integrity bill, despite the rhetoric going back and forth. We actually passed way more out of our body than they did, and this is a piece that we had passed, and they had not even considered in the Judiciary Committee. I believe that it is, in fact, now being considered over there and actually getting a review, and that committee does have a reputation for carefully and forensically picking apart just about everything in front of it. So I think that just they were not comfortable moving forward without having their legal experts who were not on the HHS conference committee. So yes, there have been, my understanding is that there's every reason to believe that this should now move through. I don't know why they would have a concern with it. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have follow-up. So just a clarification then, Chair Pinto. Conversation has or hasn't happened with Chair Limmer. Not that that has. I just want to confirm that we've tried. Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Heitzman, so I will say I have not myself spoken with Representative Limmer about this, or with Senator Limmer, pardon me. But my understanding, my understanding is that this should be moving through. But I will admit, as I'm answering your question, I have not personally connected with him. I don't know why they would have a problem with this, right? We want to have people who are having kickbacks, as described in here, be available to be charged. As you know, I work as a prosecutor, and be able to charge with a crime, convicted of crime. So I don't know what problem they would have, but I will certainly look into that as based on your question. So thank you.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just then one last thing I kind of wanted to hit on in considering your position as a prosecutor and some of the conversations we've had with the department and how they described challenges they had in some cases trying to prove things like intent. The language as we have here and in your experience, could you kind of walk us through what your expectation might be in terms of how this would aid the department in their effort and maybe there's a specific area where you could point to and say, this would be the benefit and help me better understand. Will they be able to utilize this, I guess, is the bottom line, or is there going to be a threshold they just are going to have a very difficult time trying to prove?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Heisman. So one thing, just a reminder, I mean, we do want as a society to have, and it's not the Public Safety Committee, but like we want a relatively high threshold for charging somebody with a crime. Like there's a lot of bad behavior that is not a crime. I'm just speaking as a general thing, right? It's so the most serious thing that we can do as a society is to say this person has violated our laws in such a way we want to do that, and potentially have prison, et cetera. And so you kind of want to have a relatively high threshold for that. You want to have a somewhat lesser threshold for civil actions, for administrative actions. And part of, I think, what was getting a little bit confusing with this along the way is the idea that, and the criminal process takes a long time. So if you try to go straight to a criminal process, it might be that, in fact, you can't shut down a program as quickly, and there's various other issues there. So what I'll say is that, yes, I think that this will be extremely helpful when it comes to those situations where the person, where we can, in fact, prove that the elements here are satisfied. We certainly do want to be bringing a criminal charge against that person. Yes, I believe this would be extremely helpful in that. So I guess I'm looking, the key, as I say, on page 7, someone who is, this is line 7.17, who is intentionally soliciting or receiving any remuneration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As a prosecutor, those are elements then that I'm going to be checking to see, did this person do this kind of action? Did this person have this mental state, this intention in doing it? And these are elements that I can then use to charge that person with a crime. So yes, I think it'd be quite helpful.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Anything further?
Final comment, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm definitely going to be supporting this bill today, Mr. Chair, and I just want to point out how much I appreciate how far we've come on this. Last year, I think we had a difficult time convincing the chair that there was fraud in these programs, but obviously we've turned that corner, and it's clear that CCAP was riddled with problems, and I'm glad that we are seeing some of the fruit of our efforts from the last session and that we are continuing to pursue this. So I just want to reiterate my appreciation for your effort, Mr. Chair.
And Madam Chair, Representative Eisman, thank you for that. I'm glad to have the support. I will note that 2319 I did author last session, and it did contain not only this but a lot more as well. But I take what you're saying, and I'm glad, we'll be very, very glad to have your support. So. I think we're
Representative Franzen, you have a question?
Hi there. I don't know why I always say hi there. But anyway.
Hello.
So it would have been nice, though, for this to be the very first bill, the first major bill. And that's just my opinion, you know. This is what the public is asking for, is this continued conversation. They weren't, $500 million we just spent last week. But this would have been nice first. With that said, some of the data practice, I'm just going to talk about this little allegation of kickback here. So one of the memos that I received was the Minnesota Department of Human Services and the Office of Inspector General. And so it's just a little memo that, and this took place December 20th of 2016. So there was a deputy inspector, that came from a meeting with child care providers and DHS staff. And a spokesman for the providers told the group that it is well known that providers give kickbacks to mothers for bringing their children and supplied fake paychecks. And so at the meeting which took place, the providers wanted DHS to enforce the parents can't transfer their children from one center to another, or DHS should limit the distance from the parents' residence to the center their children attend. DHS responded that this affects all licensed child care centers and parents should be free from using a provider of their choice, which I agree, right? We don't want to keep a parent somewhere where they don't want to be. Mm-hmm. So-and-so responded, I say so-and-so because it's blocked out, responded that by changing legislation to limit parents changing providers, that would help lower the number of fake paychecks that providers give to clients and eliminate the need for paying parents kickbacks. Quote, we all know that providers pay kickbacks to parents and fake paychecks, end quote. Quote, we are in the business of making money. If we make $50,000 a month but pay out $30,000 to mothers in kickbacks, we lose profits, end quote. And the individual from DHS asked, why don't you stop paying out kickbacks? And I don't mean to laugh, but this is comment. The answer responded is so ridiculous. And our government knew all the way back in 2006. The spokesman for the child care providers said all providers won't agree to that. End quote. So, Mr. Chair, how could you just lay out, like, how does this bill help with this?
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Franson, I don't know the specifics of what you described, but I will just say that what the bill does is that it, and again, as we tried to do last year, ended up being blocked, is that it has, if you look on page 8, you know, penalties for solicitation of a kickback. I mean, it's, I guess, at least at first glance, it seems to directly address what you're saying. And I will point out that our very first hearing this session was, in fact, a review of the program integrity issues. We're now having this bill come up now, but yeah, this is what we're trying to do. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Representative Franson, any follow-up?
No.
Thank you. I would like to further point out that the sheer number of positive testimony that we heard on House File 1 potentially shows that the public is also excited about the investment that we're going to be making in our youngest Minnesotans. So, thank you. Chair Pinto, any closing thoughts, or did I miss any questions?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I'll be eager, as I know you will, too, to close out this one final piece. We got most of what we were trying to do last session, and we made a really strong effort with this and got almost everything in, and this is this final piece to complete the work that we started last session when it comes to this issue. And so, and with that, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'll renew my motion that House File 2319, as amended, be referred to HHS Finance Division.
Certainly. Chair Pinto renews his motion that House File 2319, as amended, be referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division. Those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. House File 2319, as amended, is re-referred to the Health and Human Services Finance Division.
Exciting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
This is Richard's.
Members, we have House File 3311 before us. If I can get a motion that House File 3311 be placed on the general register.
Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 3311 be moved to the general register.
Okay, thank you for that motion, Representative Bonner. And Representative Richardson, you are up to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have an amendment.
Oh, my apologies.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move
Okay, we do have an author's amendment. It looks from Representative Bonner moves the author's amendment A1. It looks like it's simply updating enactment dates. Any discussion to the A1? Hearing none, all in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the bill is now in the shape that Representative Richardson, you wished it to be, so please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3311 is a bill to modify the Birth to Age 8 pilot project. The initiative brings together partners and services to ensure that kids are meeting developmental milestones from birth to 8. The research is clear. If children are reading proficiently by third grade, they are more likely to graduate high school and achieve greater economic success. Early identification is a key component of the program to identify children who face challenges to healthy development and school success. The goal is that 100% of children identified would meet the state proficiency reading target by the spring of third grade, while wrapping supportive services around families to address critical needs. The 2017 legislation passed implementing language for the project. In order to move forward in a way that allows for optimum participation, we're seeking to modify the language defining the target population. Currently, children must be participating simultaneously in the WIC program, family home visiting, and the early language learners program. This language creates substantial barriers to participation and was not the original intent. This bill would amend the definition and would ensure that children eligible for the program by participating in one of those programs, and would also create flexibility for other children in need of the services to participate with as well. With me today is the Director of Public Health at Dakota County, Bonnie Broshoff, to share briefly about the program.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Pinto members. I'm Bonnie Broshoff, Public Health Director at Dakota County.
House File 3311 makes small changes to the language that was passed in the 2017 Minnesota Legislature that granted funds to the Birth to Eight Pilot Project and Data Portal. And this is work being led by Dakota County Public Health. I'd like to thank Representative Richardson for her leadership on the legislative fix that we're requesting here today. The Birth to Eight initiative works upstream during the first 8 years of a child's life to prevent gaps in services, promote school readiness and collaboration across sectors, and protect lifelong health and success. The Birth to Eight project has been recognized locally and nationally for successfully reducing the number of kindergarten surprises in participating school districts. And this has been accomplished by an intentional referral process with parents' consent and the strong partnerships of the four participating school districts. In 2019, 60% of the referrals that were made from our WIC program to schools were new to the school census or needed updated contact information so children and families could be reached and benefit from school programs. Basically, this process dramatically decreased the kindergarten surprises, and the referrals created opportunities for early childhood development and school readiness for those families that agreed for that referral. Dakota County has also successfully built the data sharing portal that allows county and the local school districts to collaborate intentionally and ensure that children are proficiently reading by the spring of third grade. The Birth to Eight initiative and the data portal are all voluntary. It's been created in close partnerships with those four school districts that we have involved, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Invergrove Heights, and Burnsville school districts. Additional details about our partners and the history and the outcomes to date in this initiative can be found in the fact sheet that was distributed, so hopefully you picked up a copy of that. In order to move forward with our pilot for the data portal, we're seeking to modify the language defining this target population. As it's written now, children who enroll must be participants in three groups simultaneously, and again, those are the Women and the Children Program, Family Home Visiting, and Early Language Learners. This was not the intent of the 2017 legislation. It severely limits the number of children who qualify, and it doesn't align with the intent of the partners that were involved in the development of the initiative. Since last fall, the Birth to Eight partners have been ready to use the data portal, but our ability to do so was delayed due to this language limiting those children who can participate. For the joint powers agreement that will be done between the county and participating school districts, the target population needs to be clearly defined. The bill before you seeks to define that target population as those who are engaged in one or more of the listed programs. Participants must still opt in and provide parental or guardian consent. The bill doesn't change the goals of the program or the vision. Our school partners are in full support and were involved in the development of the bill before you. These small changes will allow the pilot project to better serve a large number of children and families and then allow us to evaluate the outcomes and test the portal. So we're asking for the support and happy to answer any questions. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 3311? Not seeing anybody coming up. Okay, so any questions, members, or discussion for that matter? Representative Katiz Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Richardson, Ms. Brushoff, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It sounds like it's going to help a lot of families in Dakota County, so I'm on board.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Thank you, testifier. So it seems like what you're doing now in Dakota County and this program is really, cutting edge. That it's maybe the way forward for a lot of counties and really as a statewide. So, I want to hear you talk more about it, and also just how we can keep in touch with it and know what your challenges are, what barriers you're experiencing, but then also what the outcomes that you're seeing and if it's living up to what the expectation is. Because this idea of the portal that's that then works for the family so that the families can more seamlessly move forward and that we shore up that safety net. Because also what I hear you saying is, again, we come back to what we're trying to do, which is to reach and wrap our arms around those that are most vulnerable. And those families that are most at need and at risk, so that we help when it really matters, which is in these very, very early age, but that we maintain that and that we don't lose the children until we finally, you know, we get them in those school programs and our, you know, the school programs are the backbone where, you know, where really our traditionally our state has really shown is, you know, we've got K through 12, it's like, okay, now you're good, you're in school, we know where you are, we can see you, but it's those years leading up to it that we're missing kids. So, yeah, so if you, there was a question there. I hope you found it.
You can look for the question, Ms. Breezoff, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative. I'd start to say that as far as sharing outcomes, we are going to be very happy to come back and share whatever successes we have using the data portal, because we aren't using that right now. It's all ready to vote since last fall and found this glitch through the attorney's review. And as far as the outcomes to date that we have had, even just having those partners work together, the kindergarten surprises is kind of one that the superintendents have just been really pleased about, because otherwise they didn't know about these families or children beforehand, and they're missing out on their enrollment in the early childhood programs. They're struggling to find the families that could benefit. So we have shared that success, and another success has been getting more children into early childhood screening earlier instead of waiting until they're age 5. We found that parents were confused and really thought it was a test, so they were hesitant to try to get in earlier. Once we got feedback from parents, we changed the messaging, and in those districts, they have a totally different approach that is done with each district on really encouraging the screening to be done earlier. And that's positive again, because then they find out what they need to get enrolled in. So through the local public health association, Dakota County, we shared this, and whatever can be adopted now through others is happening. There are a few other areas that they're already doing a lot of this work. With sharing, if it's with consent in WIC, they'll offer them and say, can I send your name to the school district so they can reach out to you and let you know things that you may want to be involved in. So that, some early wins, and I think the things that just showing when it's intentional and you come together, and again, you know, it's all voluntary, but we have asked parents for feedback and have tried really taking their feedback for messaging, as well as just saying, how can we best help you? And been very, it's been very positive, saying I am in support of others looking and making sure my child, if they're not developmentally appropriate, what can be done and what do you have to offer me. And so that's been very exciting to hear it directly from the parents and have that feedback.
Thank you. Good. Representative Wasilick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Breezoff, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the data sharing piece of this. I think one of the pieces we hear in a lot of instances where anybody wants to share data, that there are issues with how to do that and making sure that we're protecting privacy. So I'm wondering if you could speak to kind of how that process worked and how it's continuing to work.
Ms. Breezoff.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The data sharing is, first of all, it's all with consent. And so the consent form is Tennyson and then HIPAA compliant. So with the parents' consent, what we are sharing is very specific. It's kind of higher level developmental milestones. We're using the tool, it's the Ages and Stages questionnaire that is the parent filling that out. So it's just key milestones along the way where that information is being shared and would be in the portal. It doesn't involve case notes or anything like that. So we're seeing the data portal was meant to be really a system level portal and give enough information to just flag and say, boy, there's concerns developmentally, and then who's involved and how can you follow up. So we're very cognizant and from the get-go know that we would want this to follow all the privacy and have designed things as far as consent that has to be signed and updated annually. And parents can opt out at any point as well.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Richardson. This was for continuing this. This was a Republican initiative. I believe it was started by Representative Tara Mack. Is that correct? But anyway, we look forward to that report due on January 1st of 2022. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Franson. And maybe that's because I was wondering. There's the reference, of course, in the session law that we're modifying to this being a pilot. And so, just want to kind of make sure that I'm understanding. Is the idea then we get that report that Representative Franson referenced, and then the idea is we could potentially be, you know, implementing this statewide? Can you just talk a little more about that, Ms. Breesoff? Kind of the potential for the state in doing this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, as far as the report, you know, that's something we're committed to. We had some updates we've already been providing since the funding, but it's been more around process versus outcomes since we haven't had the portal up and running yet. But as far as making this, once we actually have this piloted and have success, any of our partners, we're really ready for them to work and have this in their districts sooner than later, and have had a lot of interest. As I had mentioned, some similar work is being done in the city of Bloomington with that school district. Their superintendent was very concerned about kindergarten surprises as well, so they already have the voluntary part of sharing between WIC and schools. They're in Scott County and in Olmsted County, and I could say Polk County. There are many others that have already looked at this. The data portal, we're also pleased about this, that with the funding and how we've developed the portal, it's in connected to an electronic health record, but it's a portal. So it would be either counties, and many of them use the same data system that we're using called Public Health or PHDoc, and it would be made available to those that already have that. And if not, there's a way that others could make arrangements and use the portal as well. So from the very beginning, we didn't want this just to be about Dakota County and having this available, but to make sure it would be built in such a way that it would be available for others as they're interested and as we can share how valuable it is for families.
And can you remind us if you know about the amount of state funding that is going to this? I don't know if you know that offhand, but just in case, if you can.
Mr. Chair, the amount that was designated was $200,000 that was focused totally on the portal development, and we have expended that since the portal's developed, and again found this little glitch, and we knew through the attorneys from both the school and the county that until we cleared up the language, we couldn't move forward to use it.
What's really exciting to see, especially the partnership between your public health director with the schools and that integration. So, good. Thank you. Any other member questions at all or discussion? Oh, Representative Bonner.
Really quick question for you. So, do you know, is this portal hosted on a cloud base or something of that nature that would make it? You kind of mentioned that we were building with the intent that potentially other counties or districts could potentially use this at some point in the future as the pilot plays out. And I'm just curious if it's built on like a cloud structure or something of that nature that would make it easier for them to then become a part of that program or that portal.
Ms. Breesoff.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not the technical expert, but I do know with at this point in time, the program that the portal's connected to is on a server. And I, you know, as far as if those that have the same PHDoc system, that would be probably pretty seamless for them. As far as if you don't, how you would access the portal would be something that we definitely would need to get clarified. But thank you for the question.
I think you actually just answered my question.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's good.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further from members? We'll give Representative Richardson. We'll give you the closing remarks. Anything you want to say?
I would just like to ask for support, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. With that, Representative Bonner renews her motion. House File 3311 be placed on the General Register as amended. 3311 as amended. Thank you. Be placed on the General Register. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion prevails. House File 3311 is recommended for placement on the General Register. Thank you so much, Ms. Breesoff. Thank you, Representative Richardson. Members, just a scheduling note for next week. We will not be having a hearing on Tuesday. No further comment on that.
We'll have to come in late.
No hearing on Tuesday. And we'll be sending out the agenda for Thursday. Should be later today, I would expect. So certainly, obviously, give plenty of heads up on that. But so we'll not be together then. And then with that, I believe, members, that we are adjourned. Thank you all.